Hey, welcome to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 86 degrees at 309 here on this Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. Welcome to July. You know, it's crazy because a week where it should be kind of a short week, long weekend. Most people take the week off. You know, it's a down week for a lot of people because of the 4th of July holiday, you know. Let's just make it a long weekend. Let's just make it a long week. And if you did, good for you. You should. Take that time for yourself, your family, your friends, and those around you. But, man, it's been a hell of a news day. I mean, literally seconds after we got off the air yesterday, we found out that Brian Kohberger, the Idaho murder suspect of the four college students, was changing his plea to guilty. Literally, as it was reading it when I signed off the air, you know, even contemplated coming back. But we got other shows scheduled, and it's a whole hoopty scoop to do that kind of thing. But you think breaking news like that would be what they want, right? But, you know, the day goes on, and it had some time to look at it and find out what was going on, get some reactions from not only the people involved with the case, but the victims' families in this case. Obviously, we will never hear from the victims, but it is indeed a change of events. You had the Senate side of the Big Beautiful Bill passed today with the vice president, the president of the Senate, being the deciding factor, 51 to 50. Three Republicans voted with Democrats on the matter. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know where this leads when it goes back to the House. There were a lot of changes made to this bill. There were a lot of things that were put back in it that is going to be hard for the House of Representatives to stomach. So we'll see where it goes. We'll see what happens, what kind of pressure is put on it, what kind of things are made. There are portions of the bill to where there's other avenues. You know, you'll see one of it that, you know, states illegals still have access to Medicaid somewhere in the bill. But I was speaking to some people today, and it was not necessarily a horrible thing. Yes, they wanted it removed. You know, in my opinion and a lot of Americans' opinions, we should not be paying Medicare, Medicaid, or anything for illegal immigrants, the people that are here illegally. And what's happening is these funds are getting to the states, and the states are doing some sort of shell game. And it's interesting because Elizabeth Warren made a post today listing the exact amount of people, down to the single digits, the exact amount of people who will lose Medicaid in every state. With, of course, California, New York, and states like that being the biggest ones. But she didn't list why they were losing it. Were they able-bodied? Were they here illegally? Did they no longer qualify under non-COVID expansion programs? Or were they just not eligible anymore? See, they leave that part out. They want to throw out the eye-shattering number of people who may lose Medicaid, and good. If you no longer qualify, you should not be getting it. You know, I made a post today. There should be no COVID era programs, funding, expansions, anything that exist anymore. There just shouldn't be. It was a temporary pandemic. It was a temporary world emergency. That's over. It's time to get back to reality. And that goes to school budgets, to healthcare programs, to the farm programs, to where it was expanded in communities for free vegetables and fruits and such like that. These programs were always meant to be temporary. And the thing is, and the problem you're going to run into down the road is if you're going to fight tooth and nail and lie about keeping these temporary programs as the status quo, people are not going to create these programs anymore in the future. They're going to say, hey, you know what? The last time we created a program like this for temporary relief, you did everything in your power to make it permanent. So why would we do that again? So you're hurting future help that may be needed by this line in the sand drawn nonsense of a temporary, once-in-a-lifetime issue that simply is trying to be dragged on. I mean, every school district in the nation got millions of dollars more because of COVID, and they're trying to live up to that number now. Whatever they got there, plus their normal budgets, that's their threshold. Well, no, that's not the way reality works. It's just not. It's not the way budgeting works. It's not the way anything works. So if you're going to continue to lie and manipulate this program, I mean, they are an utter meltdown, which is why I said you might want to check on your Democrat friends and family today. They're having a rough year, and they truly are. They don't know what to do with themselves. You know, I was listening to my friend Sue Henry's show on the way in today. That was some of the best radio I've heard in a long time when she had two callers, you know, give both sides of the spectrum. And it was great. And if you did not hear it, I highly suggest you go back to the app and listen to the podcast because it was truly some of the best radio I've heard in a long time. But, you know, a lot of news going on. And we're going to get into all this, including some local things that are happening. You know, yesterday we talked about $14 billion in Medicaid fraud. Well, there's some in our backyard that just broke here. Now it's not $14 billion, but it's $100,000. And someone that's put in charge of the care and custody and well-being of children was creating Medicaid fraud. So we're going to talk about that. That was just breaking this afternoon. Right in our area, right in our backyard here. So you have $14 billion yesterday, one of the biggest Medicaid frauds ever. $100,000, which is a drop in the bucket compared to $14 billion, but just right here in our backyard. In our, you know, 40 square miles here, this just happened here. So when we talk about there's waste, fraud, and mismanagement, there really is. And it's amazing what you find when you start looking at it. So to go to the breaking news yesterday of Brian Kohberger, that has decided to plead guilty to murder in exchange to take the death penalty off the table. Now, in addition to that, he has also signed an agreement that he cannot seek appeal. Now, that's got to be factored in, and it's got to be determined as a win for the prosecution. Here's somebody who's going to spend the rest of their life in prison. They are pleading guilty. Now, it's unknown yet if this is going to include an admission of guilt. Is he going to tell in open court exactly what happened? That I have not heard yet. But pleading guilty without the ability to appeal is a win for the prosecution. But in any prosecution case like this, and I've handled homicide cases. That's what I did towards the end of my career. You need to take the families' wants, needs, and requests into account. Now, it is the district attorney's choice. They do not have to abide by the victim's family's wishes, but it is good practice, and it is just the human thing to do, to take that into deep consideration when you move forward with a case. And some family members are outraged at this decision. Now, does it take time for that to sink in? I think there's a mixture of them being outraged that they found out by getting a letter, which in my opinion was extremely cold and callous. That's not the way this should happen in any case. Any case I've ever been to, there's been personal face-to-face meetings when decisions like this were made, when you were weighing the pros and cons. You know, they were part of that. You know, and even if you made the decision, you still went to them and said, hey, this is where we're leaning, but we want to get your input here. This is the thing. Now, does it save the family of going through trauma again, going through a trial? Yes. You know, I'll tell you 100% that any trial in a murder case is extremely traumatic for the victims' families. They have to relive this. They have to go through this. They have to hear details that in a lot of cases, you know, do they really want to hear and know? And that's usually up to the family. You know, I've had cases where family members have gotten out and walked out during certain testimony because they just couldn't take it. And there's some that sit there and want to hear every detail to kind of understand in their own mind and find closure. Like I was saying, that the way this was done, just a letter sent to the family and no personal face-to-face meeting, and not being consulted with in the decision to accept a plea, even if that's the decision you're making, it still needs to be talked through with the victim's family to get them on board as much as they can be. not have them get contacted by media surprised and outraged because they just received a letter saying that he's going to plead guilty and he's not going to face the death penalty. Because you would have to think, and I would want this person never to breathe air again, free air again. And that's not just behind bars for the rest of his life. Behind bars for the rest of his life, he could still get emails, send emails to his family, still have visitors, still get a birthday cake sent to him on his birthday, and a whole lot of other things. So is that the, even though they're behind bars and they're incarcerated and they are in prison, serving their time to society in quotation marks, for someone who recklessly ripped part of your heart out of you, your family member, murdering them, and believe me, they know some of the horrid details involved with this. It's hard to accept this as justice. So I don't think this is the last we're going to hear about the family's outrages for regards to this, but in the end, it is the district attorney's decision to do it. The person, it will be seen as a win as far as the criminal justice system goes. Person will be pleading guilty to the murder and spend the rest of his life in prison without the ability to appeal it. And most likely parole, I would assume. So, you know, that was the breaking news yesterday, and it was, see what happens. It's 3:22 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Got a couple of text messages in regards. Somebody said the judge can turn down that plea, right? Yes, the judge can. Will they? It's doubtful, but they do have the ability to. Somebody else texted in, as a Christian, I don't believe in the death penalty. Only God should make such decisions. And my answer to that was, hopefully you never have that faith tested. And I truly mean that. You can call or text at 570-883-0098. Here is Joe from Edwardsville on COVID programs.
Yeah, Rob, how you doing? Sorry, I know we're pressed for time due to the emergency alerts and whatnot. And so let's blaze through this. As far as any kind of a government program or creating a bureaucratic job go, nothing ever goes away. It grows. You're, once again, a couple of years younger than me, so I don't know if you remember, but during the 80s, when Congress talked Ronald Reagan into making everyone, all the illegal immigrants in the country, legal citizens, and they said, and swore up, down, left, right, and forward that no, and then we're going to close the border. Well, A, we know that didn't happen, and B, again, this was in the 80s. When I was reading the story I read, this was in the George W. Bush administration, so post-2000, call it 20 years later, some of the people who were hired to administer this were still working for the government. This problem, it never went away. These people who were legalized during that period, it would seem, they still need government employees to administer them. That's what happens with a government program. That's much like what went on with our COVID programs. Once a social program never goes away, is the moral of this story. A quick story, I read another article, and this was just an aside. There was a man who used to stand at the bottom of a set of stairs. This is in London, England. And I'm not sure if it was in Parliament or at Buckingham Palace, but at some time, you know, a member of Parliament stopped and asked this man, what did he do? He didn't give directions. He didn't stop people doing. He just stood there all day. And it turned out that he had inherited the job from his father, who 30 years before had been hired to stand at the bottom of the stairs and stop people from going up because the stairs had just been painted. So after he held that job for decades, he passed the job down to his son, who then got a uniform and made official and was just there collecting a paycheck. And that's the way such things go.
Well, there's a portion of our alcohol tax here in Pennsylvania that's a few hundred years old simply because it was a temporary fix because of a flooding.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, no. There is nothing temporary about government. You look at some of the people who have been serving in Congress for decades, generations even, and I'm not going to get worked up on all of this. And now that I have said the things that I really called to say, because yes, no, absolutely. Once you start getting COVID money, no, you're entitled to the COVID money. As far as the families in the Koberger case are concerned, and I understand, trust me, and I don't agree. I very rarely agree with things that the government does. And yes, they should have been dealt with in a much better fashion than getting an email with an attached letter saying, this is what's going to happen. They should have been, someone should have shown up at their door and then sat there and took the abuse that these families wanted to lay out because, no, this isn't what I wanted. I wanted this guy to go on trial. I wanted people to hear what happened to my child. But in the end, it is a decision that prosecutors have to make because they're looking at how strong is this case? Is there any chance this could go off the rails? What is it going to cost us to prosecute this case? You know, is it worth the extra expense, time, and grief for these families who are, as you say, going to have to relive it? My humble opinion is that these families will be better off because this thing pops up again in the media every 2 weeks, and they have to be reminded of what happened. This might give them a chance to go ahead and trust me, it's not my decision, but it might give them a chance to finally put this loss behind them and realize that it's never going to get good, but every day it will get better. Every day that the sun comes up and you look around at the rest of what goes on in the world and it's, you know, you've suffered that loss. There's nothing that can change that. And and I know now I'm babbling. So I'm going to like stop being a nitwit and be done with that. So
it's all good, brother, my friend. It's all good, my friend.
I just. So, but anyway, yeah, no, the government is never good. Once you, as they say, you can't fire civil service. You get a government job, doesn't matter what it
COVID,
was.
COVID programs are the new entitlement. Simple as that.
Yes, sir. And they always expand. And here again, that's what members of Congress are doing now is, no, look at what these people are doing. They're trying to rip this money away from the people who what? The COVID pandemic is not, it is no longer even, it's a thing. It has become the seasonal flu. But for some strange reason, we need to still keep kicking out all of this money.
Indeed, indeed. All right, my friend, we'll leave it at that. I'm up against the news break, so I appreciate your call.
I know. That's why I wanted to blaze through it quick, brother. All right, good luck to you. I will see you on Thursday.
Thank you. It's 3:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's coming up on 3:37, 85 degrees on this Tuesday, July 1st. So there's some breaking news being reported from the Times Tribune. James Halpin over there, from the Citizen's Voice, but it's being published in both the Citizen's Voice and Times Tribune, I guess. A case manager at the Children's Service Center in Wilkes-Barre has been charged with filing dozens of fraudulent claims and defrauding Medicare of more than $72,000, according to the Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General. Khalil Rashid Rivera, 30, of Scranton, was working as a blended case manager at the center at 335 South Franklin Street when he billed medical assistance for services he never provided to dozens of children, prosecutors said. Rivera's case and another involving a former counselor at Lycoming County were recently highlighted in the U.S. Department of Justice National Healthcare Fraud Takedown Initiative, which has resulted in 324 arrests involving an alleged $14.6 billion in fraud. These cases are not instances of mistaken billing. They involve providers who were criminally unprofessional and in some case predatory towards people they were trusted for caring for, Attorney General Dave Sunday said in a statement. These bad actors cannot be allowed to harm their patients and steal from the healthcare system that is dependent on by so many Pennsylvanians. And again, innocent until proven guilty. Prosecutors said the 51st statewide investigating grand jury recommended charges against Rivera, who was accused in January of 2023 of failing to see patients, including one family that was neglected for nearly a year. The charges allege that Rivera billed Medicaid for visiting clients at their home and other locations when, in fact, his work badge and the building access log revealed he was in his office during the relevant times. Multiple families reported not seeing Rivera for extended periods, and the time between visits was growing longer and longer, prosecutors said. Rivera also began having families sign multiple visitation forms at a time, creating a paper trail for visits that never happened, according to prosecutors. The charges allege Rivera ultimately billed thousands of fraudulent claims for 54 different clients, resulting in an overpayment of more than $72,000. Court records show Rivera is charged with felony counts of filing fraudulent medical assistance claims, submitting false claims, theft, and tampering with public records. Magisterial district judge arraigned Rivera and charges released him on $10,000 unsecured bail. A preliminary hearing was scheduled for August 11th. So it appears there is waste, fraud, mismanagement, no? Indeed. Indeed. Again, not the 14 point something billion dollars we talked about yesterday, but $72,000 here from one individual affecting 54 families and children. It's amazing what you find when you have the fortitude to look for it, right? And if this continues, if we continue to find this waste, fraud, and mismanagement, these systems could be in all right condition. Stop defending waste, fraud, and mismanagement and people that don't deserve these programs to begin with. It's as simple as that. It really is. On that note as well, Pennsylvania missed the fourth consecutive budget deadline. Top lawmakers are saying talks are progressing, and the governor seems optimistic that a deal will be reached, but this is the fourth consecutive budget deadline that has been missed in Harrisburg. We kind of called this last week when I said Monday is the deadline for the budget, and you have the governor talking about sports stadiums in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and a NASCAR track in Philadelphia and going to the NASCAR and going to golf outings and having a VIP tent that we, the taxpayers, paid for. Really didn't seem too concerned with a budget deadline, now did he? Or else he'd be in Harrisburg sitting down at a table in his dining room with both Democrats and Republicans saying, let's get this done. But he wasn't doing that. It's all about the optics, right? The next step for him, and we all think what that is. Have a good idea, right? Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 345, 84 degrees on this Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. There are storms moving to the area. There is a line of storms. Well, the first line of storms, which is pretty severe. I mean, Harrisburg all the way up to Pottsville is about to get slammed or is getting slammed currently right now. But there's a line of storms all the way from us here down to about Roanoke, Virginia. Roanoke, yeah. And then there's another line behind it. But once they get past, the evenings looks pretty good. But it looks like the next couple of hours is going to be sporty here. And again, south of us are the more intense storms, it appears, where we have some rain, and it's coming on a northeast trajectory as it comes across the state. There is another wave of just kind of rain behind it. Looks like with the cold front moving in. But the heaviest of the storms are south of us and head down to just south of Harrisburg, and they're coming through the area now. So in our area, we are going to get some storms. We are going to get some rain. Be careful driving. Be careful of pooling. It appears, looking at the radar, there is going to be some heavy downpours. So just be aware if you're out and about in that, especially south of our area here. And you know, it's coming through, and it looks like, you know, probably by 7 or 8 o'clock it should be done with us. So you got the next couple hours with us. We'll let you know what's going on. I'm sure we'll have a couple more alerts come through to let us know what's happening as well. But I just wanted to give you a heads up because I got an alert on my phone about some storms in the area. So Luzerne County has released their audit. And I went through it a little bit yesterday, last night. And the Luzerne County government brought in $307 million last year and spent $302 million, according to the 2024 audit released Monday. After another positive and negative financing sources were factored in, the $5 million surplus increased to $6.77 million per the audit. Now, despite net gains overall, the general fund operating budget portion sustained a loss, the audit indicates. Overall, looking at it, and you can get it. Actually, the Times Leader posted a link to you can get it. You could also find the 87-page audit posted on the county budget and finance section of luzernecounty.org. It was prepared by Clifford Larson Allen. The audit was completed by the June 30th County Home Rule Charter deadline. That's a good thing. And it looks like a full presentation of the audit will be held at the July 22nd County Council meeting. Overall, looking through it, Luzerne County's not in bad shape as far as this audit goes for 2024. It's a stark difference from Lackawanna County, in my opinion, being a Lackawanna County resident. They seem in a good place. Now, they ended 2024 with a net pension liability of $94 million, which was an improvement from the $108.7 million reported the prior year audit and $115.8 million recorded in 2022. Now, some good news here. At the end of 2024, the employee pension fund held approximately $321.6 million in assets for future payments and was 76.45% funded. Now, that's up from the prior year where it was 73.8% funded. So Luzerne County's pension fund is going in the right direction. These gains are occurring despite rising payments to retirees. The fund issued $24.7 million in payments to pension members in 2024, an increase from the $23.95 million it paid the prior year. So they paid almost $1 million more in pension payments, but yet their pension balance went up $22 million and the funding went from 73.8% to 76.45%. Now, as far as debt goes, the county is going to free up approximately $26 million annually after the debt is repaid in 2030. So as long as they watch their debt payment, their debt, what they take out in debt between now and 2030, they'll be getting an extra $26 million a year. So that's a good thing. In all, I think it's a good audit for Luzerne County. So congratulations on that. It's coming up on 3:50, time for the Bloomberg. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 84 degrees, 3:54 out there. So, Philadelphia, Jake, did you hear about this? Philadelphia is going to get a WNBA team. Jake's just shaking his head. The league announces WNBA is coming to Philly. And if you don't know what that is, that's the Women's National Basketball League Association, their league. They announced Monday that Philadelphia has been awarded a team along with Detroit and Cleveland. You can thank Caitlin Clark for this, even though you probably despise her and as she brings your sport higher and higher into the spotlight. Exactly. Jake, what do you think about Philly getting a WNBA team?
I mean, I think it's good for the city itself, like we talked about last week and like you were talking about just a little while ago. I mean, our governor seems pretty hell-bent on NASCAR and other sporting events in Pennsylvania and whatnot, and this was talked about, and, you know, Franklin Field, and now WNBA. All seriousness, I mean, like I was talking about, Philadelphia is a very passionate sports town, regardless of what people think. I mean, obviously, you've seen the Eagles, the Phillies, the Flyers, 76ers. And I think, obviously, no matter what sport it is, I think that it's something very popular a very popular, passionate sports town. I think, obviously, someone with the magnitude of Caitlin Clark, it's like you talked about. That's the reason why the WNBA is getting the attention that it has over the past year and a half or so. So, I mean, I think it's good. It's always good to broaden the league and expand and whatnot. So, I mean, I'm all for it.
Yeah, so the new franchise will play its games in South Philadelphia and is owned and operated by Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, which is headed by Joss Harris, who owns the 76ers. And Comcast holds a minority stake in the new team. So you got to take that for what it is. But EJ, I see you got your headset on in there. So WNBA to Philadelphia, huh? I think they'll get a good fan base there.
Oh, they will. They're just like Jake said, they're passionate. The thing that scares me about that team is they have a part ownership with Comcast. And any Philadelphia sports fan that likes the Flyers or the Sixers know that's not very good. So I hope they have better luck than the Sixers and Flyers do as far as ownership is concerned.
Yeah, Philadelphia is a city with unmatched passion, rich basketball tradition, and unwavering love for his team, said WNBA Commissioner Kathy Elbert.
I agree.
Native of Collinsworth, New Jersey, it's only fitting that the iconic sports town is finally home to a WNBA franchise.
Yeah. And you know what, Rob, to be honest with you, the Sixers, as bad as they were this year, my brother's a Sixers fan, so we went down earlier this year, and they were playing the Wizards. It was a Wednesday night. Game should not have been as packed as it was, but they still showed up. As terrible as both teams were, especially the Sixers, they still showed up every single time. I mean, all their sports teams, but especially their Sixers, they love their Sixers down there. So I don't have no reason to believe that this will fall apart, especially with the fact that Caitlin Clark's going to come there a couple of times a year. That's a great idea, and I think it's really good for the city from not only a sports standpoint, but also a tourism standpoint. Women's sports is growing at this point, and you know that's a big thing down there. We know the demographics of that type of stuff. Basketball's big. Women's sports is growing. Can't go wrong with that, right?
Yeah. Well, it looks like Philadelphia is going to try and get this online by 2030. Now, the Cleveland franchise, which is owned by Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert, will play by 2028 at the Rocket Arena. Detroit's team will start playing in 2029 at Little Caesars Arena. Tom Gores, who owns the Pistons, is the majority stakeholder, and former NBA players Grant Hill and Chris Webber and current Detroit Lions quarterback Jared Goff are minority owners of the Detroit team.
Good for them. And you know what? That Detroit's another city that has had such bad luck for so long when it comes to sports. Good for them. They're going to get a team, a WNBA team. The Tigers are finally doing something. The Red Wings are turning a corner. They are really close to being back to their old selves. The Lions have done well. I'm sure Jake can speak on that. I'm not sure how he feels about Jared Goff. I know he likes Jared Goff more than Matthew Stafford. But
I was going to say he's done more for me in fantasy than Matt Stafford ever did. But yeah, I mean,
well, how many are on a roster on a WNBA team? I have no clue.
I think it's only two less than the NBA, so that would be somewhere around the mid-20s.
All right, so say 25. Let's throw a number out there because I just don't know. Here's three extra teams. So this is 75 more women that could have a professional sports place now. That's simply great for the expansion of these
Absolutely.
Teams. With the popularity in college women's basketball, and now this opportunity here. A lot of these players, and we saw it with Brittany Griner and stuff like that, have to go to Europe, have to go to Russia, have to go to other places, China, to play a sport. Now, hopefully, with the opportunity here, and I'd hate to say it, but this administration seems to be bringing the jobs back here, and with three new WNBA teams, these WNBA players are going to be here on American soil.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting. Funny how that works, huh?
They won't have to pay a tariff on their earnings.
Right. Yeah. Maybe we'll get more cities. I'd like to see Sacramento get one. Kings are doing well too, so basketball's back there. Pittsburgh, always a good sports town. And I'd like to see some more southern teams get it. I mean, I know that Birmingham, Alabama, they've been fiending for hockey, they've been fiending for football, and they just can't seem to pull something in. So maybe they'll get a WNBA team. I'd love to see that happen too.
WNBA team in Pittsburgh?
Come on, Pittsburgh? Now. I'd love to see it. They need an NBA team, to be honest with you.
I mean, the Steelers coach is going to be looking for a new job. Maybe maybe he can coach women's basketball.
No, that'll never happen. It's mediocrity.
That would be a train wreck and a half.
Yes, it would.
All right. It's coming up on 4 o'clock here on WILK. We'll be back.
I'm Michelle Brand.
To be honest.